The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, today is the anniversary of the English FA's decision to ban women's football from FA-affiliated football grounds. But why did they do it? I'm joined by Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Now, we think of the Women's Super League, which is very popular at the moment, and we saw the big crowd at Aviva the other night when, unfortunately, when we went out of the Euros on a 2-1 defeat to Wales. And you think this is a new thing, women's football, but it's not a new thing at all.
No, as many, many female athletes will attest, a lot of the prominence, especially of women's football now, and prominence of any big women's team, it usually comes from a place of intense struggle. So it just so happened that on the week that they had the Euros playoffs, today is the anniversary, as you say, of that ban by the FA in the 1920s. It went on for 50 years and really set the game back quite a number of years as well.
What is the earliest record of women playing football?
Well, women had been playing football as early as the 18th century in Scotland. It was actually linked with local marriage customs in the Scottish Highlands. Single women would play football games against married women, and single men would watch these games and use the evidence of their football ability to help them select prospective brides.
My goodness, so it was a kind of a mating ritual. Strutting your stuff, literally.
Yeah.
In front of the local lads.
Well, I've heard a lot of like my friends say they'd marry a certain player because they're so good, but this is probably taking that a bit too far. The more regressive society in England, for instance, was slow to allow football or women into football, into the playing population. Women were only actually allowed into the stands in the spectator as a spectator in the late 19th century as a means of curbing the boisterous behaviour of male fans that
so
they were allowed into free.
Yeah, they were a moderator to try and calm the lads down.
Yeah, to check them a little bit. And Preston North End, one of the first football clubs in England generally, professionally at least, let women in for free. Some 2,000 women began turning up regularly to games, and they said, actually, there's a bit of money to be made here. So then they started charging women like men, which is quite the great equaliser. Well done, guys.
Now, do we know anything of women's teams in Ireland?
Well, the British Ladies Football Club came across, they were formed in 1895, and they came across the Irish Sea to play a club in Belfast in 1915, and then a team in Dublin the following year in apparently the Jones Road, which is where Croke Park was, or is still. So it sounds like they were playing.
So Croke Park is the home of the birthplace of women's soccer.
That sounds like it, because that was before the GAA took it over in 1913. It was the home of Bohemians. So there's plenty of reason to assume that that's where women's football first kicked off in Dublin.
Now, the big breakthrough was when the lads were off at war.
Yes. So with the men fighting in World War One, the women took the place in the civil services in the factories, all their jobs. And on their lunch breaks, the factory workers played football. And actually, that's where a lot of the men's teams come from, out of factory teams. And Dick Kerr Ladies, one of the best women's football teams of that generation, was founded in 1917 during this period. And actually, Prime Minister David Lloyd George encouraged this newfound love of football. He saw it as a good propaganda tool to see how the women were mucking in the factories while the men fought on the Western Front. It also helped that a lot of these games were used to raise funds for wartime charities. So they proved to be very, very popular. And that popularity lasted past the war when the men came back after World War I.
Interesting, we were talking about a German custom the other day where from an island in the North Sea, a German island where the fishermen came back from sea and the women had been running the show while they were at sea. So this custom has come about where they used to beat their wives to kind of put manners on them when they came back.
Right.
And there was a big documentary on it, and they've now abandoned the process because even in modern times, it seems there was a little more than fun in it for some people.
As
it was
in,
kind of hurting them properly. So anyway, they've abandoned that. They've abandoned the tradition. But what did the men do coming back from war when they saw their women playing football and doing it well?
Well, they kind of found that tough. So historian David J. Williamson wrote, "It was extremely difficult for many men to accept the idea of ladies playing what had always been regarded as a male preserve, their sport." And you see a lot of writing at the time of, this is very unladylike, it doesn't suit the female temperament at all, this is a male game. But women's football continued to capture the imagination of the English public. And in 1920, Dick Kerr Ladies and St. Helens, the two top sides in England, took took each other on in a game in Goodison Park on Stevens's Day. 53,000 people watched as Dick Kerr ladies won 4-0. The game held the attendance record for a women's football game on the British Islands until 2012. I think the Olympics was when that was broken, and it remains the largest crowd for a domestic women's game in England. Multiple accounts actually suggest that between 10,000 and 15,000 people were turned away at the gate after the ground had reached capacity, and it raised £3,000 for unemployed and disabled ex-servicemen, so around about £175,000 in today's money.
Significant cash. Didn't sit well with the leadership male of the Football Association.
No, Susie Rack, the famous football broadcaster over in England, argued in The Guardian in 2022 that as well as the popularity and the gate receipts being generated by women's football, the fact that the revenue was being channeled into political and working class causes did not sit well with the establishment. So David Lloyd George did an about face. On the 5th of December 1921, England's FA banned women's football from their grounds across the country. That's not a ban on women's football in general, but obviously so many football grounds over there are FA affiliated, so they really had nowhere to go.
Now, they had an explanation for their ban at the time?
Yes, they said that complaints have been made as to football being played by women. The council felt impelled to express the strong opinion that the game of football is quite unsuitable for females and should not be encouraged. The council are further of the opinion that excessive proportion of the receipts are absorbed in expenses and an inadequate percentage devoted to charitable objects. So, you know, just the chauvinism combined with a bit of corruption there too.
But also, I know you advert to this, that there was competition. The women were actually drawing crowds that might have gone to the men's game, but were not going.
Yeah, and it was attractively played as well. Some of the best or most interesting and enticing players at the time came from that team in Dick Kerr Ladies, and lots and lots of people just wanted to see. There was a 14-year-old player who's apparently this absolute wunderkind, and they just managed to draw in the crowds much better than the men. And obviously, as you say, that did not sit well with them at all.
Because it was a new Division 3, North and South, and they had doubled the number of men's clubs, and they needed spectators.
Yeah, again, they doubled the clubs, as you said, and all these people were going to watch women's football as opposed to men's football. So Alice Barlow, the BBC, one of the players from that Dick Kerr ladies team, told the BBC back in 1993 that we could only put it down to jealousy. We were more popular than the men and our bigger gates were for charity. And this, by the way, was not the most punitive thing done across the world. In Brazil, a place famous for its football, they made it illegal for women to play football between 1941 and 1979. So jail time would have been on the cards if a woman was seen with a football at her feet.
So the effect of this was to really put down and keep down women's football. When did it begin to change?
So there's a bit of a barren period lasting decades. The professional women's teams continued to play, but on a smaller scale, and the FA would find any and every excuse to shut down or stop women's games whenever they could. The turning point actually comes when the men's team claimed the World Cup on home soil in 1966. Public interest, especially among women, begins to grow again in women's football. The WFA, the Women's Football Association, is founded in 1969, and plans are put in place to build another England women's football team.
When do they eventually lift that 1921 ban?
In 1971, so just 50 years. Yeah. And an England team had taken part in a Women's World Cup organised by the Federation of International European Female Football in 1970. That was hosted in Italy. And again, because it was an unauthorised team, it was not treated well at all. The team, again, coached by Harry Batt, went to the second tournament in Mexico the following year, along with five others. That was obviously the place where Pelé had guided Brazil to the Men's World Cup the year before. And they were blown away by the reception they got. A feverish atmosphere in Mexico, the football fever was still very much there, and the types of crowds and excitement that were totally alien to them back in their home countries were there. So 19,000 people were packed into the Azteca Stadium during the tournament.
But the WFA, newly founded, didn't approve of this. They hadn't approved of it, so therefore they penalised those who took part.
Yeah, when those players returned from the World Cup in Mexico, their participation in the tournament was not sanctioned by the WFA, as they said, and some of the players served bans from taking part in the World Cup team. There's a fantastic documentary on this released last year called Copa 71, just explaining the level of the tournament and the feverishness of it and some of the most controversial moments in women's football, which took place there. So it was such a far cry from what they were used to.
All right, 50 years it lasted. Anyway, now we have a completely different picture of women's football. Huge crowds and a very, very popular league, the Super League.
Yeah, it's the biggest league. It attracts the biggest players in the world. And naturally, it's starting to grow here in Ireland. There's like names like Kate McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan are household names now. But as we said at the start, that came from a place of intense struggle.
This text from Dave: while we've come a long way in relation to women's soccer in Ireland, let's not forget it wasn't long ago that the women were handed tracksuits in Dublin Airport before travelling for an away game and then were asked to return those tracksuits. It's come a long way, but still a long way to go, says Dave. And Marianne points out that women playing football in wartime would have built up team building skills in women and trade union activism for equality in work and in marriage, says Marianne. Cameron, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.